Final hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Don't forget, our NFL game of the week is a doozy. Chase's Dallas Cowboys.
Barn burner.
At Kansas City, at Arrowhead, to take on the Chiefs. 3:25 kickoff. That NFL game of the week right here on ESPN 102.5. The game brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. He's Robbie Stanley, but he only goes by Robbie in the mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. You can hear their show leading up to our show every day, Monday through Friday. Robbie and Rex Road. You never know what rabbit hole they're going to go down every morning. I'm sure it's not in the notes. I'm sure it's not planned. I'm sure it's not scripted. I don't believe it's a liner read that you read. But, Robbie, truly, every morning, I never know what the hell is going to happen to Joe, whether he's going to slap himself in the face with headphones, fall out of a chair, or rip someone for, you know, a music video, a song, or you just never know what you guys are going to do. That's what's fun about
it. Seems like he's a little unstable, huh?
I didn't say that, but
that's a good way to. It's a good way to put it.
You know, physically, mentally,
you guys have fun. That's
what's going to go on.
Yeah, you guys have fun, man.
We do lots of fun.
That's what you're supposed to do in the mornings.
Expense this morning. That's right. I had somebody tweet in a picture of Rabel as a movie cover of William Wallace from Braveheart. So instead of Mel Gibson, got a nice close up shot of Mike Rabel. It was good stuff.
Braveheart. I saw that.
Braveheart.
I have not seen this, but the way you guys were talking about it, I need to see it. It sounds like it was well done.
Oh, very well done. Shout out to DJ Burnside on Twitter. And got to tell you, Rabel looks like he could have been in that movie pretty well, could have handled himself pretty well. I could believe that he would be an extra in that movie.
You know, before we get into Pred stuff, just your overall thoughts on this Titans team, because Vrabel really is an interesting character, right? I mean, we've seen him kind of grow into this role, but, you know, there's things he's changed on, and there's some things he hasn't changed on and never will change, right? I mean, it's just in the fabric of who he is. It's in his DNA. But he's also, I think, done a much better job of morphing into a head coach. And he deserves a lot of credit for what they're doing right now, because there's just times when you look around, right, and it's almost unexplainable how they're still able to get wins considering all the circumstances and all the things that are happening around them.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, if you're asking me, I think he deserves Coach of the Year right now in the NFL.
Yeah,
I do.
Me too.
I think he's done an unbelievable job. I mean, we've talked about the injuries that this team has dealt with. That's well documented, but just the teams that they've beaten too. It's pretty amazing to see what they've done so far this year. They're 8-2. They're in first place in the AFC, and right now they're continuing to win in games without their best player. And, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, Vrabel, sometimes you take a look at him and he's prickly with the media, and, you know, the press conferences sometimes are pretty hilarious, in fact, in terms of just how awkward they can be and how much he basically goes out of his way to say as little as possible. And, I don't think he's alone in that regard when it comes to head coaches across professional sports. But one of the things that's interesting to watch is, those post-game videos that the Titans come out with every week after they win. I think you get kind of a true glimpse into who Mike Vrabel is inside that locker room in those videos. And, you know, the players seem to universally love playing for him. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes after a certain amount of time. Certainly has done a great job. And, like I said, I think he deserves NFL Coach of the Year consideration pretty heavily right now.
Look, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. There's a reason why we carry those press conferences. I mean, when he is prickly Mike, I think it's must-listen to radio. I mean, when you just don't know what you're going to get. And I don't want to, quote Forrest Gump and talk about a box of chocolates, but I do kind of feel like from day to day, when we carry his press conferences, you don't know what you're going to get, and that's part of the intrigue.
It's part of the intrigue, and I heard you guys talking before, and I totally agree, especially in weeks like this when they're a 10.5-point favorite on the line and everybody's expecting you to just come in and totally thrash Houston. You think he would be in a good mood?
No.
It seems like weeks like this, it's the exact opposite. Like, he's ready to just choke somebody up there at the podium. So I enjoy it. It's very funny.
Can you explain to me how that Matthews goal, not goal, didn't go in like 4.5 minutes into the second period yet last night? I thought for sure when they said they were going to look at it, I'm like, what are they looking at? That's a goal. I mean, what are you talking about? It went in and out. And we see those quick goals, you know, quick shots in the back of the net and back out, you know, or just under, roof it, and back down and out. We see those all the time, but they're good goals. I'm like, what are you looking at? And then, you know, you slow that sucker down, and then you start going through the layers. It's like, how in the world do you go from crossbar to post to straight down, hopping across the line, swiped away from Saros? Oh, by the way, the play is still alive. Coming right back at you through two sticks and going in, and UC Saros kicks it out. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
Well, it made me remember pretty quickly why I was so bad at geometry and why all these, like, angles really confused me, because I was with you. Like, I took one look at that play, and I was like, well, that's in the back of the net, so I don't know what you're looking at. And then you watch the replay, and like you said, you know, I've seen some doozies before. I remember when Craig Smith had the play in Montreal where he basically shot it and stopped it all by himself, and I never thought I'd really see anything crazier than that. But that Matthews one last night is up there. That was just insane. I'm not quite sure how that didn't go in, but maybe it's just the mojo that UC Saros is carrying with him right now, because it seems that everything is that is humanly possible for him to stop and to keep out of the net, he's done a pretty good job of doing that so far.
Yeah, I mean, while there's a lot of other good play that we're going to talk about, if he stays at this level, I mean, he is going to be the reason that they're going to have a chance to continue playing past 82 games and, you know, possibly get on a run, because, I mean, you can make the case. I mean, last night could have easily been a 4 or 5-0 game. Easily. You know, he had – I mean, that 2-on-1, are you kidding me? I mean, how many guys – just how quick he is from side to side, post to post, it's unreal. And just, you know, I grab my legs – and my hamstrings just watching him, you know, flop around and spread out. I mean, it hurts me just watching what he does. But, yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. So I want to ask you, we had a conversation with David Poile yesterday, and I asked him about Rocco Grimaldi, why it just, you know, it came to, you know, what they did. Putting him on waivers, he clears waivers, he sent back to Milwaukee. And this is just my vibe, just listening to the general manager. It just kind of feels like the days of Rocco Grimaldi here are kind of over, because it just feels like he doesn't want to be here and they can't do anything with him because of his contract. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I kind of got the same vibe. I'll be honest with you, and I talked to, you know, a couple people about this before the season began. I was kind of surprised he was still here in training camp. I really was. Just because you think about the way the season ended a year ago, he wasn't really in the plans. You know, over the offseason, you look at the moves that the Predators made. Ryan Ellis is out. Victor Arvidsson is out. And, yes, I think in part those moves were made to try to get younger and to bring some more youth into the team. I think they were also made because they want to get bigger. And, you know, obviously bringing in a guy like Philip Myers, who's a giant, you've got Tanner Janot and Matthew Olivier and Yakov Trenin, all these guys that are absolute tree trunks out there
McCarron.
Playing in the forward position. Yeah, I mean, they're huge in the lineup that they're out there with right now. So I was kind of surprised that Rocco was here to begin the season. Now, having said that, just because you want to get bigger doesn't mean that you just have to totally abandon every small player on your team, and I understand that. But, look, I think we've come to realize since John Hines has been head coach that forwards playing defense is pretty important to that guy. And the fact of the matter is Rocco last year defensively was just pretty bad. I mean, every number you want to look at, your traditional stats, your analytics that you want to take a deep dive into, the numbers were just not good defensively. And I know you look around and you say, well, Rocco Grimaldi had a 4-goal game a year ago. How can you tell me that he can't help this team? I still think Rocco Grimaldi is an NHL-quality player. I think offensively he does some things with his speed and his offensive capability that can still help the Predators. I just think defensively John Hines did not trust Rocco Grimaldi, and I think there were other players in the lineup that he felt were better equipped to play the style of play that the Predators want to play. So eventually, I mean, that's going to lead to a pretty good souring of a relationship. I think that's what we've seen. I think Rocco Grimaldi still feels like he could play at the NHL level. My guess is he's probably right. I just don't think it's going to be here.
Yeah. Is there any concern with you on Elli Tolvanen's start to the season? I know it's just 16 games in, but you know, you look at where he's playing in the lineup. You look at where a guy like Tomasino's playing in the lineup, and just looking at the numbers, I mean, Tomasino has looked better, and he's, what, 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, former first-round pick by the Predators. Are you concerned? And I think probably the biggest concern for me on his front is losing confidence, and we know losing confidence at this level is a losing proposition. Like, it's not good for anybody. A veteran, a young guy, doesn't matter how long you've been in the league, if you don't have your confidence, you're not going to be able to succeed at this level. What's your level of concern 1 through 10 right now with Elli Tolvanen?
I'd put it at about an 8. I'm pretty concerned with Elli Tolvanen. I really am. And, you know, it's one of those things you can look at it through just the lens of this year, but I kind of take it back to the last part of last year as well. When he suffered that injury and he was out of the lineup, he came back, and it just never really felt like he was the same guy. And obviously in the playoffs, he was not productive there. And then you come back to start this season, he scores on opening night, and you're like, okay, well, here's the Elli Tolvanen breakout year. He's going to get to 20 goals. He's going to be a legitimate threat for this team on the power play. He's going to be a legitimate scoring threat 5-on-5. And quite frankly, most of the time this year, he's just been invisible. I understand right now, you know, he's playing with Tommy Novak and Michael McCarron. And, you know, honestly, no disrespect to those two guys, but I don't really know what he's supposed to do offensively with those two guys. But even before that, you know, he was in a position where he was playing with some good players. He was playing with Mikhail Granlund. He's played with Philip Tomasino. He's played with any number of guys, and he just hasn't looked all that dangerous this year. Even on the power play, hasn't looked very dangerous. So I am pretty concerned about Elli Tolvanen's start. Like, at some point, you've got to find a way to figure it out at the NHL level. I realize he's still young, and I realize that he's got a shot that you just love if you're a Predators fan. But it doesn't do you much good to have that shot if you can't get open and find a way to use it. And I think he's been invisible far too often so far this year.
Do you think he could benefit from maybe a send down to Milwaukee just for a little bit?
You know, maybe. I think the thing you
just
worry
for
about
his confidence.
Darren, what Darren brought up. Well, I think, you know, it depends on how he's wired. How do you handle that? I think some people will handle that well, and that can help your confidence if you go down there and play well. But that could also be a, man, has it really gotten that bad where they're sending me down to Milwaukee? And, you know, you'd be interested to see how he would respond to that. You know, I think he's a guy where at some point you just got to see if he could figure it out at the NHL level. And, you know, obviously he's pressing right now. I thought he played well against Arizona. Obviously had a couple assists in that game. But, you know, you could tell with he's shooting right now. He got robbed the other night, and you could just see his head kind of get thrown back, and he's looking around like, are you kidding me right now? Like, that's what it's got to feel like for Elli Tolvanen. So, you know, he's got to find a way to get open and use that shot. You know, the aggressiveness needs to be a little bit more on display more often. You know, I think a big part of what made him successful last year, everybody talks about the power play, and that part of it was great, and that was the obvious part. But Chris Mason and I have talked about this a few times. When Elli Tolvanen was really on his game last year, he was engaged in the battle. He was playing physically, and he was getting in on the forecheck. He was creating turnovers. He was doing all the little things that John Hines wants his players to do. And, you know, I just don't see a whole lot of that right now from Tolvanen. So that's got to get better in that regard. I think if it does, you'll see some more chances created 5-on-5.
Robbie Stanley is with us, one half of Robbie and Rex Road, morning 6 to 10 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So I viewed last night as a measuring stick game, and we obviously saw how it went, 24 shots on goal. For you, is the next measuring stick game, believe it or not, Anaheim, because they currently sit first in the Pacific Division?
Well, it is. I mean, I'm kind of blown away by what we've seen from Anaheim so far this year. And apparently,
I'm not buying it, just so you know.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm buying it either, but, you know, I guess if Troy Terry puts up 178 points, we might have to buy it at that point. But, you know, look, I'm interested to see how they respond on Saturday. I think one mark of a good team is when you have a performance that is bad and that you're not proud of, can you come out and correct it immediately? I mean, that's one thing that I noticed a lot about, you know, some really good teams the last couple of years, be that Carolina, be that Tampa Bay. More often than not, when they get shelled and when things don't go the way that they want in a given game, the response the next time out is usually pretty good. That's not always been the case with the Predators. So I'm interested with now the schedule playing out a little bit differently with no Ottawa coming up tomorrow night. How do you respond coming up on Saturday? That, to me, is going to be really telling for this team. But I agree, you know, that Anaheim game, if you had asked me about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I'd have said, well, it's the Ducks and the Predators, and the Ducks are going to be pretty bad this year. And so far, the Ducks look awfully good. I'm with you, Chase. I don't know that I'm buying it yet, but I'm really looking forward to that one coming up next week. But I think more interested to see how do you respond on Saturday night against a team that has struggled so far this year. I think you've got a good opportunity to really get a good taste in your mouth coming back home next week.
Does the extra day off with Ottawa being postponed, do you view that early in the season as a good thing, knowing that things are going to get more condensed as you go, or would you like to keep having some momentum right now?
Well, I view it as a good thing in the short term because you look at the schedule. They've got Montreal coming up on Saturday, and they got four games next week, Anaheim, Vegas, New Jersey, and Colorado, and four games in 6 days. So I think an opportunity to stretch the legs a little bit, maybe get some rest and get some practice time in, could be pretty beneficial for this group because next week they're probably not going to have much practice time. They're not going to have much opportunity to rest up. So yeah, I'm okay with it. You know, they played a lot of games as of late, this road trip, which basically feels like, I don't know if you guys agree, it basically feels like one big road trip that they've been on. I mean, you have a pit stop in Arizona, it's basically the same thing as continuing through a road trip when you come back home for one game. So I don't think a break, even an unexpected break, is the worst thing in the world for the Predators at this point in time.
How concerned are you that, you know, we haven't really heard an update on Philip Forsberg? He's week to week. That's been a knock on him of, you know, injuries and in a contract year and with an offense that for the most part has been clicking, getting production out of Duchesne, out of Johansson. Unfortunately, Forsberg not able to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning from a couple of different angles. Number one, you know, obviously the Predators have been able to sustain and play pretty well without him. I don't think that's a long-term formula for success this year. If this team is going to make the playoffs and they're going to be a threat once they get there, I think we all know that Philip Forsberg is going to have to be a pretty big part of that. So you're concerned from that standpoint. You know, hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later, but the fact that we've really not heard much on that front yet, to me, is concerning. But, I think the bigger picture, the larger view that makes it more concerning is it makes what was already a complicated situation with his contract, I think, even more complicated. Because I think everybody would agree that Philip Forsberg is one of the most important players on this team. I think in a perfect world, most people would agree that it would be nice to have him on your team for the foreseeable future. But as Adam Bingen has pointed out a couple of times, I have no clue what his contract is going to look like because there's not really a good comp for him in terms of his deal right now. And as you said, Chase, the knock on him has been the injuries. It has been 4 or 5 years now since he's been fully healthy for a season. And, you know, it's not like he's had major injuries along the way that you're concerned about his body just totally breaking down. It's, you know, 12 games here, 15 games there, 12 games here, and eventually that adds up after the course of time. So it's concerning to me because you look at that deal, and I know his agent is probably looking around saying, well, you can't convince me that Philip Forsberg has not been the most important forward on this team for the last few years, and he's probably right about that. But if you're David Poile, I think you can make an argument based on the production that he's had the last few years and his availability that he's not worth a whole lot more than what he's making right now. So that really makes, I think, what was already a complicated negotiation situation, I think, even more complicated.
Roby, good stuff. Good to talk to you. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll be listening tomorrow morning. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, fellas. I appreciate you.
Roby Stanley, half of Roby and Rex Road, morning 6 to 10 a.m. Check it out right here on these airwaves leading up to our show. They do a really good job in the morning. We'll come back more on the other side as we'll continue this discussion as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
But first, let me tell you about BetMGM, because you can get your payout before the game's out with BetMGM. Place a moneyline wager on any Thursday night football game, and if your team is up by 10 or more points at halftime, you are a winner. That's a full payout for only half the game, no matter what happens the rest of the way. Simply go to your BetMGM account and opt in each week to the Thursday night halftime payout promotion. Want to continue wagering in the third quarter? Keep it rolling with BetMGM's extensive live betting options. If you need to hit the sack early, use your winnings to place a one-game parlay on Sunday and go for gridiron glory. If you're new to BetMGM, download the app today and see how you can turn halftime into cash time. Make a moneyline bet on Thursday night, and if your team is up by 10 or more, you'll win at the half. Only at BetMGM. Opt-in required. You must be 21 years or older. Must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.